is no such thing at this date of the world's history in America
as an independent press. You know it, and I know it. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Good day, Mr. and Mrs. America. And to all the Christians, the patriots and seekers of truth all across America, around the world, I bid you welcome to a special new series, which will be conducted in two parts. It's entitled The Big Sleep. The Big Sleep, but that's an old movie. The title is, that's as far as it goes. Why do we call it The Big Sleep? I think it's fairly simple. As we rush toward this globalism, this new world order, the vast of Americans are asleep. And as much as I regret the reality of what we are about to share with you during this program, it is an indisputable fact that the vast majority of our populace today are simply incapable of assimilating and comprehending the information analysis which we're going to share with you. The class of individuals of whom I speak are the living, breathing result of an extraordinary, unprecedented, protracted campaign of brainwashing and mind manipulation, the likes of which has never occurred in all of history. And despite this unfortunate situation, however, this material has been compiled with the thought in mind of reaching out to a truth-seeking remnant. The Iron Curtain of censorship and disinformation must be recognized and challenged. Forbidden truth will go forth and achieve its own unique results. And the powers of darkness will ultimately be exposed in the depths of their depravity and corruption. Fear them not, therefore, for there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, and hidden that shall not be known. From the book of Matthew 10:26. We begin this segment by speaking of the truth about the war against terrorism. For you see, on September 11th, 2001, the curtain lifted on a new act in the scripted drama that is unfolding in our nation and world. A rapid series of terrorist strikes hastened the creation of a new reality wherein we are now at war against a faceless, shadowy, cowardly enemy. That enemy, of course, is terrorism. At this precise moment, serious-minded persons would do well to keep this certain basic precepts in mind. First among those precepts is that truth is always the first casualty of war, and that common sense is the second. Oh, be assured that a high percentage of what is presently being bandied about the airwaves and the print media is, at best, gross distortion of the facts, and at worst, outright fabrication. What we will endeavor to provide during this two-part program is a proper and effective framework within which truth can be derived, interpreted, and understood. Intellectual, academic, cognitive discipline are all essential if we are to avoid being subverted into destructive avenues of erroneous thoughts and conclusions. And we must be willing to sink our teeth into the entire matter at hand and view it analytically in its full breadth, scope, and context. To do any less, my friends, would lead us to improper assumptions and determinations, and in the ensuing process, we become part of the problem rather than the solution. And so, what are the actual facts concerning the tragic events of 9/11/01? How did this unspeakable disaster occur on the peaceful soil of America? What specific events and circumstances combined one with another to produce the physical destruction of the twin towers of the World Trade Center in New York City, as well as the damage to the Pentagon. Is there a story behind the story that must be assessed and contemplated as we strive to make sense out of the present dire reality engulfing our nation? Indeed, the official version of what has transpired relative to this national crisis is inherently deceptive and clearly designed to produce specific desired results. The structured, organized forces of evil have long enjoyed an iron-fisted brand of control and domination over the outworking of policy and affairs within our nation. They operate the levers of control within the realm of international financial institutions. They own and totally dominate both the print and the broadcast media. They exercise monopolistic control over the process whereby individuals are elected, shall we say, to political office, thus enabling these illicit power brokers to be certain that only a specific brand of compromised, sold-out individual can attain the credible status of elected official. If someone is elected who happens to refuse to go along with status quo corruption, the power structure has highly effective techniques for neutralizing or elimination of such persons. In sum, nothing of major significance occurs by happenstance or spontaneous chance. Major events, both favorable and catastrophic, are contrived and orchestrated at the highest echelons of power. Now, it needs to be understood that according to scriptural truth, such as that found in Ephesians 6, that there are immensely powerful, dark spiritual forces at work, influencing and manipulating and at times exercising complete control over the actions and affairs of men. And these highly advanced and organized satanic forces are actually able to execute wicked strategies that span generations and centuries of time. And those who are incapable of comprehending this reality are woefully ill-equipped to understand the true nature of history. The phenomenon of dialectic materialism is ceaselessly at work as the architects of global government feverishly carry out their agenda. One step back, two forward, one back, two forward, over and over and over again. This is how the enemies of Christ operate. They constantly utilize the thesis, antithesis, and synthesis method. Problems are deliberately created or engendered. And next follows the heavy publicization of the dreaded situation at hand. And finally, the power structure comes forth with a sweeping and comprehensive solution to the multifaceted circumstances that seemingly represent a lethal threat to safety and security and happiness. This process, my friends, has been outworked repeatedly during the course of American history. It has now been refined to a well-honed science, and relatively few persons today even begin to comprehend the existence and reality of that which is being spoken of. Now, a presupposition is defined as something supposed or implied as previous, taken for granted. It is essential that our presuppositions be based upon accurate and factual foundation. Our historical enemies have seen to it that the opposite is true for the vast majority of people. And nevertheless, what can we correctly presuppose regarding the crisis of 9-1-1 and its ongoing aftermath? All of this becomes that much more important as recently we have unfolded and witnessed the 9-1-1 Commission's report, which has been published in its entirety on the Federal Observer. Presupposition 1, that the commentators and spokesmen are lying. And as we have already noted, we can assume that in general terms, things are not as they seem to be. The talking heads of the media and all the official spokesmen they are interviewing are not telling us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. In fact, we can be utterly sure that much of what we are being spoon-fed by the spokesman of officialdom is simply not true. Presupposition 2. That this crisis will be exploited for conspiratorial purposes and opportunities. We can also safely presuppose that, like all crisis situations heretofore, this mother of all catastrophes will be used as a pretense, an excuse, and justification for the implementation of all manner of diabolical mischief into the fabric of our lives and societal structure. As we have seen with the Patriot Act and Patriot II Act and Homeland Security, presupposition 3, that an ongoing sequence of additional crisis phenomena will follow in the wake of 9-1-1. It was and is also logical and legitimate to presuppose that ongoing and additional crisis circumstances will and have continued to unfold in the nearly 3 years since that terrible day. Already the anthrax phenomenon, the hysteria that it subsequently spawned, that piggybacked on the original 9-1-1 crisis, other things we've already discussed, the two Patriot Acts, the Homeland Security. Oh, my friends, it was indeed obvious that the reactionary mindset that which encompassed our nation was thrown into perpetuity. And from the very outset of that disaster, we have been incessantly and repetitiously informed that everything is forever changed in our beloved nation. From day one, it has been given that from henceforth we would need to trade liberty for security. Presupposition 4. The liars are not the good guys, and nor are they our friends. You see, in a time of any crisis, it becomes natural to want to be able to have trust in those who occupy positions of influence and power. After all, we are facing and continue to face the unnerving reality that an enemy is stalking us from points unknown. And to think that those who hold the greatest positions of power and responsibility in government, in the media and military, in the industrial complex, etc., might actually be behind or complicit in something as dreadful as the 9-1-1 event has almost been too horrifying a prospect for the average gullible American to even contemplate. And yet this grim fact happens to be precisely what we are up against, contrary to the 9-1-1 Commission's so-called findings. These powerful personages that we call leaders, these personages in question are virtually, to the man, consciously committed to the overarching cause of submerging our once sovereign nation into the wicked jaws of global government. These people know full well exactly what they are doing. They are schooled and indoctrinated into the long-established precepts of international socialism. In short, they are abject and unequivocal traitors against this republic our forefathers established according to the law and purposes of Jesus Christ. And yet at the same time, they are masterfully adept at pretending to be something they are not, namely good guys who are on the side of truth, justice, and the American way. And yet since we know without question that we have continued to be lied to by those occupying various seats of power, prestige, and influence, it is quite logical that we should seek to deduce and ascertain precisely what those lies are and consist of. And in order to ferret out the disinformation in question, we must make ready and liberal application of basic common sense and logic. Lamentably, common sense has become very uncommon in our present time. Satan's minions recognize this fact and thus know how readily they can foist blatant illogical lies upon the public at large. Major lie number one. We were told that the Twin Towers were brought crumbling down by the aircraft that crashed into them. The first obvious lie that has been enshrined in people's minds is that the Twin Towers were leveled to the ground by chain reaction factors that were engendered by the crashing of the aircraft into the buildings. Now, we've all seen the film footage on a repeated basis. The jets plow deliberately into the towers and bedlam erupts, fire, smoke gush forth, and then, in relatively short order, these massive skyscrapers implode in a gargantuan heap. What a spectacle that has now been indelibly seared into the collective American consciousness and mind. And like the mushroom cloud of the atomic bomb, the mental picture of the collapse of the Twin Towers is vividly relived over and over and over in the mind's eye of all the nation's citizens. And mark my words, as we approach the third anniversary of that diabolical day, they'll be repeating it all over again. Without a doubt, my friends, this is a huge component of the story as a whole. The physical destruction of these monumental symbols of internationalist financial power and dominance, how did it really occur? You've seen the frame-by-frame films? Because, my friends, it begins to show a different story. And yet, I'm getting ahead of myself. Were we, in fact, being lied to concerning the critical aspect of the story? Could it really have happened in the manner and fashion that we were all led to believe? Shortly after the implosion of the towers, an expert on the architecture, design, and construction of the buildings was being interviewed by NBC anchor Tom Brokenjaw. The man stated that such a collapse as had been witnessed on that day could indeed occur after a sustained exposure to the intense level of heat brought about by the jet fuel-induced fire that ignited at the time of the crashes. This expert specified, however, that the necessary time was much longer than what we had experienced and seen on that given day. In essence, the man had blurted out the truth, which completely contradicted what the public was already being spoon-fed. He had clearly revealed that what was being offered as a seemingly self-evident explanation was in fact a scientific and physical impossibility. If you remember, General Benton K. Parton tried to inject the same kind of scientific and physical impossibility as related to the Anfo bomb having brought down the Alfred P. Mura building in Oklahoma City so many years before. And yet, this expert was confirming what rational observers were already suspecting on that day, namely that some other force or factor was at work in the hastening of the collapse of the Twin Towers. And what might that supplemental factor have been that horrible day? Let us remember that various witnesses to the gruesome tragedy reported hearing multiple explosions prior to the collapse of the massive towers. It is also quite apparent that special explosive devices had been planted in advance at key and strategic locations within the framework and structure of the buildings. Indeed, the implosion of the towers was a classic demolition spectacle. It was of a precision-type nature, just as we have seen many times on film when demolition specialists level condemned or obsolete buildings. Witness how many times over and over you've seen the Sands Hotel and other old historical hotels in Las Vegas and casinos be brought down. Consider the comparisons. And yet, I might ask, why would anyone do such a thing? To the credit of decent, upright people, it is virtually inconceivable to their minds how anyone could be so evil as to set up a catastrophic event involving wholesale death and destruction merely for the purpose of achieving some longer-range ulterior motive. And yet, such is precisely what transpires throughout the world on a somewhat regular basis. Deliberately engendered wars, revolutions, famines, and a variety of man-made disasters are the stock and trade of a certain body of evil conspiring troublemakers. You see, they possess a dark vision for the future of the planet, one in which the Bible, Christianity, nationalism, individual liberty, and Western Christian civilization in general have been relegated to the ash heap of history. These wicked forces, my friends, are thoroughly endeared to their own evil religious agenda, and no cost is too great to pay in pursuit of desired objectives and success. They will stop at nothing. They involuntarily employ unprincipled deceit and treachery at every turn. Human life and dignity mean nothing to these personages. And to effect the wholesale slaughter of thousands, even millions of innocent parties, does not cause them to lose even one single moment of sleep. And yes, in order to comprehend horrific depravity, one must be cognizant of the fact that horrifically depraved beings exist and function in this entire world around us. And so why would anyone plant explosives in the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center and schedule them for detonation at the approximate time on 9/11? The obvious answer to this question is that maximum carnage and death were the desired result of the event in question. Had the fire simply been allowed to burn for the extended period of time necessary to precipitate the collapse of the buildings, there would have been amply sufficient latitude for the complete evacuation of the towers. But instead, thousands dead, there would have only been hundreds of human casualties. Rather than hundreds of policemen and firefighters being killed, there would probably only have been dozens. In other words, although still being a shocking and terrible event, the 911 attack would have been dramatically less severe. The subsequent impact upon the national psyche would have paled by comparison to what has instead taken hold psychologically within the body politic. Oh, and yes, the phenomenon of large-scale carnage and a highly substantial body count were necessary prerequisites for rendering the American people in a stunned state of shock, disbelief, and insecurity. And yet I've always wondered, where were the 50,000 people that should have been in those two buildings, those two towers at that hour? Thank God they were not there that day. Major lie number two. Prominent politicians and other opinion molders are not who they pretend to be. You see, Americans are so naive and simplistic in the way they think and view the world, though they have thrown personal responsibility and morality to the four winds. In other ways, they are incomprehensibly innocent and gullible. Like easily deceived small children, the American public can be readily induced to embrace and believe all manner of myths and fables. For instance, the average American does not understand that political office holders at the national level are completely beholden to a shadowy, behind-the-scenes power. This faction of hidden power brokers either exercise direct control over who gets voted in, or they establish their mechanism of dominance after the novice electee is sworn into his new position. This means, or the means whereby politicians and bureaucrats and television commentators, entertainers, corporate moguls, etc., are all kept in line, can be explained as follows. You see, there is an unspoken rule of the game, so to speak, that keep the power elite from even having to issue forth specific commands or orders to those in influential capacities. The primary reason they have attained under the position they hold is that they know instinctively how the game is to be played. They know essentially what to say, when to say it, and how to say it. Conversely, they also know what not to say. To summarize, as we have done many times over the past 9 years, to summarize, these intellectual prostitutes are bound by a code of silence regarding certain, shall we say, off-limits topics and subjects. Consider the now well-known quote by New York journalist John Swinton, a New York Times managing editor, at a dinner given his honor upon retirement somewhere in the 1880s, which goes as follows. There is no such thing at this date of the world's history in America as an independent press. You know it, and I know it. There is not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. I am paid weekly for keeping my honest opinion out of the paper I am connected with. Others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. If I allowed my honest opinions to appear in any one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. You see, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it. And I know it. And what folly is this toasting an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, even beyond what Swinton said, my friends, is the ultimate reality that is forever embodied in the historical occurrence of the Kennedy assassination and the subsequent ongoing cover-up of that crime. The dramatic taking of the life of a president, accompanied by the introduction and perpetuation of the lone gunman myth, clearly communicated to all existing holders of positions of influence and responsibility that there exists an organized force that is sufficiently powerful to commit a crime of such magnitude and to maintain total immunity from being held accountable. And does it therefore require genius, intellect, to arrive at the obvious conclusion that the same fate could be prescribed for anyone who might be so targeted? No more incentive is needed if you are an influential politico, a journalist, an entertainer, an author, a clergyman, a business tycoon, etc., than to know beyond a doubt that if this hidden hand of control were to deem you undesirable or an obstacle to something they valued, you or I could be summarily terminated without the slightest possibility of the actual perpetrator being brought before the supposed bar of justice. And my friends, with all of this in mind, let us think again about precisely who it is that is offering somber words of warning as well as comforting reassurances. The President of the United States, our senators and congressmen, cabinet officials, governors, federal law enforcement heads, and all others of their ilk are mere lackeys of the dark entity that operates all the true levers of national and global power. Part of the script, you see, is for all the aforementioned to assume the posture that everything is just as it seems, that we are all just one big American family. The act is carried on that the conflict at hand involved a simple case of good guys versus bad guys. We are to trust our officials and opinion molders because, after all, they are all good, patriotic, freedom lovers just like us, right? And if you believe that, let me tell you about Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and some oceanfront property I'd like to sell you right here in Arizona. The pathetic reality is that it's all a lie from top to bottom. The evil power elite are duty-bound to lie about everything because it is their intrinsic nature. Additionally, comprehensive deception is required for the maintaining of progress as they fulfill their quest for all-out global domination. The president and all other influential establishment figures are knowing participants in a monumental program of treachery and ultimate destruction against Christianity, the Constitution, and the sovereign American nation. And to believe anything other than this grim but obvious reality renders us as the equivalent of duped, simple-minded morons. Now, the diabolical agenda we have been talking to you about during this program requires that there be those who play the role of straw men, opponent, as well as the ever-present scapegoat. The straw man opponent is the figure such as Osama bin Laden or Saddam Hussein. They represented the eternal villain, the one everyone loves to hate. The gullible public can always be counted on to take up the chant against these oil can hairy villains. T-shirts, bumper stickers, lapel pins, other such items quickly appear on the open market when a new bad guy is introduced to the public. Intellectual midgets and philosophical pygmies proceed to vent their rage in a sanctioned manner against the approved targets of hatred and vitriol. The straw man is one who, although appearing ominous and menacing, is in reality a cinch to be subdued and defeated by an overwhelmingly superior opponent. And the tactic of raising up a straw man, my friends, is age-old in its nature. Now, over the past several generations, we have witnessed an ongoing processional of official bogeymen. We had Hitler and Mussolini. They are certainly examples of the tactic in question dating all the way back to World War II. Oh, let's not forget people like Emperor Hirohito. Subsequent decades of American history, we've got people like Senator Joseph McCarthy, Governor George Wallace, David Duke. How about Pat Buchanan? Organizationally, the Klan, the neo-Nazis, the militia, the anti-government groups of any sort have been held up for the public to sneer at and despise. Internationally, we've been instructed to deplore the Ayatollah and Arafat and Gaddafi and Noriega, Saddam, and now Osama bin Laden. And back to Saddam. And yes, it's an ongoing game played by the elitist power brokers by keeping the public mind fixated upon a singled-out, officially recognized bad guy. Those who are engaged in actual high crimes, misdemeanors, and treason totally avoid scrutiny. See, it's so simple, my friends, and yet highly effective as a tool of control and manipulation and diversion. Oh, in certain cases, the villain is actually a knowing player on the stage, just as in the movies, there are the actors who play the part of the antagonist. And so, too, in this real world of contrived drama, there are the scripted demons. Oh, yes. In the case of a Saddam or an Osama bin Laden, we know that they are actual creations of the global elite. They have been groomed to be cast in the role of a bad guy, and they're actually handsomely remunerated for their rendering an ongoing good performance. Can there be any doubt that Saddam could have been taken out during Gulf War I, or at any time since then? Well, we've now got the guy, but we sure haven't gotten the guy we went after, right? If we had really wanted to stop Osama bin Laden in the past or catch him now, such an objective could be easily have been accomplished via the application of overwhelmingly superior force and firepower. But you see, it's clearly not the true policy to want to thwart or apprehend these sanctioned villains. They're doing their job and playing their role to the hilt. Without them, there would be no crisis to justify the subjugation of the people and the restructuring of the world into a global plantation. And so, what do we then have forward? We have to look forward to? More dupes, more flunkies, fall guys, and yes, even scapegoats. You see, a dupe is a useful idiot in the conspiratorial lexicon of terminology. Flunkies, fall guys, scapegoats are those who are zealous yet sufficiently weak-minded to the extent that they can be handled and manipulated, inflamed, agitated, and positioned for the purposes of taking the fall when blame must ultimately be assigned. Once again, we reference the Oklahoma City bomb incident. It was Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols. John Doe number 2, the likely handler and agent provocateur, simply disappeared into the memory hole of history, as did the second and third bomb that had been announced had been discovered. And when the Twin Towers in New York were bombed in 1993, a similar personage was identified in criminal court proceedings against the alleged perpetrators. Without this shadowy government agent, there would have been no 1993 incident. He hatched the plan, recruited the operatives, provided their financing and training as well as their orders in the field, and then stood back and watched the fireworks. Oh, there can be little doubt that the 9-1-1 tragedy involved the same pathology. Conveniently, all the hijackers are now dead and burned beyond recognition, or so we were told. Now, major lie number 3 kind of says, well, it didn't happen that way. It didn't happen the way they claim it did. Yeah, a likely scenario. You see, there's simply no way we can know with certainty what actually transpired on September 11, 2001, when jet aircraft were flown into the Twin Towers in New York City. As has already been stated, we can be certain that officialdom is lying to us regarding the specifics of what occurred to bring about this dreadful event. They've lied to the public about every event of notable significance for at least the last century, and there is no reason whatsoever to believe that this tragedy constitutes an exception to the well-established track record of duplicity and disinformation. And yet what we can do, in light of the aforementioned reality, is speculate and conjecture as to the most likely manner in which events actually did unfold on that tragic morning. Based upon past patterns of conduct and tactical execution, we can logically deduce that there were probably a plurality of agent provocateur operatives at the epicenter of this entire terrorist plot. And like the government agent who facilitated the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, those active in the clandestine outworking of the 9-1-1 catastrophe were doubtlessly immersed to the fullest extent in the totality of the operation. It is most certain that they worked for years to recruit hardline Islamic activists with an extreme proclivity toward terrorist violence. These recruits were most likely formed into small cells that began training and going through the motions of what would prepare them to mesh into an operation such as the 9-1-1 terror event. Attending flight schools, being trained in skills of fighting, engaging in other activities of a suspect nature, all of this established the groundwork to make these fall guys appear as precisely what they are now being portrayed as, or what they were then being portrayed as. You know, it's very probable that the 9-1-1 terrorists believe their operation to be a hijacking, kidnapping, maybe even an extortion plot. Occasional news reports have fleetingly acknowledged that certain ones among the terrorists had in no way conducted themselves like you would expect someone who was on the verge of carrying out a conscious suicide action. Even a 2020 News magazine report even went so far as to state that it was likely that some of the terrorists did not know that they were on a kamikaze-type mission. And what I'm about to share with you is what I believe actually took place on that fateful day. You see, each of the terrorist cells was probably led by an agent provocateur who actually boarded the commercial flights in question. And at this time, the duped but dedicated terrorists had no idea that their respective leaders were actually deep undercover moles. Now remember, DEA agents are constantly engaged in this brand of subterfuge and undercover work. And by the time the Fall Guy terrorists realized what was really happening, they would have been rendered powerless to do anything about having been set up and betrayed. The provocateurs at some point employed sophisticated means to disable everyone on the aircraft, including their flunky comrades. And once the aircraft was at sufficiently low altitude, the provocateurs probably parachuted to the ground, where they were immediately met and secretly whisked away into hiding. The jet would then proceed to hone in on the targeted tower by means of onboard electronic equipment that would be drawn like a magnet to a signal-emitting device in the towers or the Pentagon. Now, the listener, those of you listening right now, might recall that the aircraft that was filmed flying into the second tower to be hit did not approach and make contact in a head-on manner. Instead, it made a banking turn into the building. Such a phenomenon is consistent with what would be likely to transpire if the aircraft were being directed like a missile toward a rendezvous with the target. And with the ensuing inferno and the subsequent implosion of the Mammoth Towers, the vast majority of evidence was completely destroyed. Thousands of bodies will never be recovered or identified. And there is no way it can be proven with absolute certainty precisely who was or was not on the crashing jets or in the destroyed buildings. An event of this destructive magnitude provides a ready-made cover for all manner of manipulation and subterfuge. In returning to one of our basic underlying premises, my friends, we can be sure that the official version of what led up to and transpired on 9-1-1 is heavy laden with distortion and falsehood. Now, with all this having been said, we have to realize that in the immediate wake of the 9-1-1 tragedy, the American public was reflexively riveted to the TV screen for purposes of finding out the details regarding this dastardly event. The conscious mind and attention span of an entire nation was now totally transfixed upon this dramatic spectacle, as was the world. But from that moment forward, virtually everything else became of a vastly inconsequential nature. We didn't hear any other news for nearly a week. America was now spellbound by the horrifically momentous nature of all this encompassing lead story. The shadowy personages who constitute the hidden hand of power in our nation and world have an obvious incentive for keeping an ongoing real-life drama, the likes of the 9-1-1 event, on the proverbial front burner. And in fact, it's been there now for nearly this 3 years. Being fully aware of the exceedingly limited attention span of the collective American public, the clandestine power brokers know that an open-ended, unprecedented major news story will prevent the grassroots populace from focusing on a variety of other events and circumstances that would otherwise garner their attention. Just as Monica Gate had kept the people from being aware of something such as the treasonous sellout to communist China, so too did the current war on terrorism. And it ensured that otherwise vital information and activities remained unnoticed and unobserved. Rest assured, my friends, that while the American people followed every little subplot associated with the Twin Towers tragedy, highly significant developments with profound implications for our future were going together at that time undetected. This is the typical manifestation of the classic smokescreen or diversionary tactic. When conditions of war are prevalent, the state automatically assumes the legitimate authority to suspend or abrogate what would otherwise be routine or normal rights and procedures. After all, it is now a state of emergency we have found ourselves in, and yet that state of emergency, as most of us know, has existed since 1933.
The prevailing assumption has been that the very survival of the nation is somehow in jeopardy. The supposed logic, therefore, followed that extreme measures became warranted in order to enable us to overcome the nebulous foe who currently threatened our ability to survive. And yet, within hours, it went from Osama bin Laden till several months later, Saddam Hussein. Of course, you know, people should be able to see through the fog and understand what was really happening then. Unfortunately, they have been greatly incapacitated in terms of their ability to effectively comprehend what actually was going on behind the scenes. The people have become entertainment and sports junkies. We have become virtually illiterates. Very little is realistically understood about even our own history over the past century and a half or so. The average American has no idea that time and time and time again we have been subjected to the type of manipulation of which we are speaking. Let me share with you some examples. The creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913 gave these shadow powers the means and opportunity to play havoc with the national economy. For further information on that subject matter, we suggest you contact us and order a copy of our four-part series, The Mask of Demetrius. Now, to continue, the result of that Federal Reserve mischief was a purposely engendered economic crash now known as the Great Depression. The crisis event gave the national government the seemingly legitimate pretense to enact Mr. Roosevelt's New Deal. And while sounding beneficial and advantageous, the New Deal, as we've called it here for years, the Raw Deal, was actually a brutal frontal assault upon what remained of our once vibrant Constitution. In the name of waging war on poverty and destitution, the federal power systematically gutted the precepts of constitutional governance. Without a literal shot being fired, our nation was conquered from within, never, ever to be the same again. And amazingly, not one in a thousand even began to understand what was happening to their beloved America at that time. The national government had moved swiftly and definitively to seize and usurp power at every conceivable level, and yet scarcely a whimper of protest was heard because people had been conditioned to believe that there was no alternative to this massive power play. Other events followed for purposes of fostering the trend toward all-powerful central government. World War II, as we know, set the stage for the establishment of a framework for future world government called the United Nations. And Lend-Lease and subsequent policies of support for the Bolshevik Russia created the climate for a Cold War which would dominate the post-World War II era. That same Cold War provided justification for an enormous militarization of the nation as America was progressively groomed for an eventual role of global policeman. Vietnam was a direct byproduct of the protracted Cold War against the ostensible communist enemy, and yet all the while we were supposedly fighting communism. We provided aid and support for the most notorious Marxist regimes on the planet. The war in Southeast Asia was deliberately engendered quagmire, which we never intended to legitimately prosecute and win. Our military forces were intentionally bogged down and handicapped by a bevy of policies and measures that guaranteed our inability to defeat a vastly inferior opponent. All the while, the American public was being propagandized by a comprehensively controlled national media. The Viet Cong were cast in a neutral, if not favorable, light. The American military force was portrayed as being an engine of genocidal oppression against those impoverished, desperate third world peasants. And the social fabric and stability within our own nation were torn asunder by an anti-war movement which flourished on university campuses throughout America. Polarization occurred between the young and old, black and white, the left, the right. And in the midst of this chaos, the Great Society program was launched. War on poverty was declared by the national government. The civil rights movement gained momentum. Forced integration was foisted upon white Americans, and academic standards began to plummet. And gradually and methodically, we began to witness the Africanization of what had always been a Eurocentric American culture. All of the aforementioned phenomena were legitimized and executed under the guise of a need to deal with and redress emergency or crisis conditions. And yet early in the 20th century, America experienced a period known as Prohibition. And during this era, alcohol was outlawed, with the natural result being the spawning of a huge black market booze industry. Organized crime quite naturally rushed forward to seize this ready-made opportunity for illicit power and profit. And the gangsters of the Prohibition period are legendary in the recent history of America. For decades on end, they built their respective empires of criminal syndicalism. Their flagrant and flamboyant transgressions of the law created a climate that provided ample justification for dramatic expansion of federal legislation, law enforcement, corrections, and general oversight of state and local authority. The FBI, Mr. Hoover's FBI, evolved into the virtual secret police of America during this colorful time frame. In the name of law and order and fighting a war against organized crime, the national government vested itself with broadly increased levels of power and authority. Well, Prohibition was the premeditated catalyst for this overt assault upon civil liberties. And when the ulterior goal was accomplished, the original institution of Prohibition was dismantled. You see, all the new governmental powers, however, remained intact. And in the ensuing years, the Prohibition phenomena would be replicated via the so-called war on drugs. First, a drug problem was created by virtue of policies of judicial leniency, open borders, and the erosion of moral principles. And as the demand for illegal drugs grew, the black market of this shadowy world of organized crime once again flourished. And in the interest of effectively waging this supposedly gallant crusade against illegal narcotics, the DEA, or Drug Enforcement Agency, was established, and police powers in general were expanded. And in reality, there was never any genuine interest in winning this phony war. While some government agents were involved in busting importers and dealers, others were helping to facilitate the success of similar ventures. In other words, the national drug crisis was something that had been intentionally devised in order to bring about a prevailing set of circumstances ideally conducive to the vast expansion of federal administrative, bureaucratic, and police powers. And so, we had nothing new under the sun, nor do we to this day. Now, as we turn back to our current situation, the somewhat recently launched war on terrorism, we can be certain that the same age-old process will continue to unfold. Oh, my friends, already we know we've been saddled with the latest Trojan horse entity to come down the pike. The Office of Homeland Security, to me, is one of the most frightening developments in our relatively short national history. No one even begins to comprehend what a dangerous and abusive monstrosity this outfit is slated to become. And now that the 911 Commission reports have been released, the whole purpose of Homeland Security seems to have been overshadowed. Now they're recommending another new division to oversee Homeland Security and the FBI and the CIA and all the various law enforcement agencies. Draconian legislation continues to rumble through the lawmaking assemblies of the federal government. In the name of fighting terrorism, the feds have forged brazenly forward in their calculated war upon the sacred liberties for which our forefathers bled and died, and only a fool would presume that this excessively voluminous legislation wasn't already drafted and awaiting implementation well before the 911 catastrophe. Oh, indeed, it was already prepared and simply waiting in the wings. And what are the obvious implications of this fact? Well, quite clearly, the powers of darkness were merely outworking yet another phase of their blueprint for global tyranny. This evil agenda is incremental in nature, and like the analogy of the frog in the pan of water on the stove, the heat must be gradually applied. If it were to occur all at once, the frog would, you see, jump from the pot and avoid the gruesome fate of being boiled alive. And likewise, if too much occurs all at once on the national or world stage, the rank and file of the population would be jolted into an acute awareness of reality. But to keep such an occurrence from transpiring, the conspirators follow a procedure of slowly ratcheting up the pressure for abandonment of biblical and constitutional principle. One crisis at a time, they slowly accomplish what could otherwise never be brought to fruition, namely, the practical enslavement of a once free peoples. Now, to understand the reality and methodology of national and global conspiracy, one must first possess awareness of the existence of an evil created being known as Satan. The devil is greatly misunderstood and, in fact, is not even believed in by vast numbers of people. When do you last recall the president, a powerful senator or congressman, a major news commentator, or any other person of greatly influential stature even mentioning Satan's existence, much less delving into the question of how he might be superimposing his will upon the affairs of men? Well, as you well know, this simply does not happen. While it is currently fashionable for leaders to make broad, generic statements about God blessing America, no mention whatsoever is made about that arch-evil being of whom the Bible says a great deal. Of course, if Satan were to be acknowledged, then it would logically follow that discussion should be entered into regarding his comprehensive agenda to dominate world affairs. Once people were stimulated to begin thinking along such lines, it would not take a genius to figure out that the devil had already made monumental progress in pursuits of such diabolical goals. In fact, it would become readily apparent that in the absence of organized, determined, and enlightened Christian resistance, Satan had indeed gained a stronghold of controlling influence and power within the halls and chambers of national governance. Is it not obvious why the overt, upfront leaders within our nation don't so much as whisper aloud the name of Beelzebub? It isn't a matter of them not believing in him, but rather they are simply abiding by what we shall call company policy. You see, a great many of them are actually the conscious servants and henchmen of the devil. The only reason they even hold their powerful positions is because they have made a Faustian pact with the devil. They have embraced the deal that Jesus rejected in Matthew 4 in exchange for having conformed to his comprehensive game plan for conquest. Satan has rewarded these intellectual prostitutes with wealth, women, fame, prestige, etc., and in some instances these co-opted humans are even engaged in the active and conscious worship of their false god Lucifer. Because you see, Satan has supernatural power. The devil's power pales into insignificance when compared to that of God. When contrasted with man's potential and man's capabilities, however, Satan possesses extraordinary power. Remember how in Exodus 7, verses 8 through 12, Pharaoh's magicians were actually able to turn their staffs into snakes, just as Moses had done? By what power was this feat accomplished other than that of the evil one? Well, God promptly demonstrated his vastly superior power when Moses' staff or serpent devoured all the others. Nevertheless, my friends, the supernatural force that flowed through Pharaoh's magicians was enormous and extremely dangerous. Oh, that old serpent, the devil, has been allowed by God to wield incredible power to which to seduce and to subdue those who shun and reject truth. Satan is able to transcend generations, centuries, and even millennia as he craftily angles toward his ultimate objective of global conquest. Satan derives immense satisfaction all along the way by promoting lies and ritualistic murder. And to the extent that God's people abdicate from their rightful status in promotion of the kingdom of God in the earth, Satan is able, in a corresponding sense, to rush in, to fill the void. Indeed, he has masterfully accomplished that object as the generations and centuries have accumulated. Men come and go from the world stage, but Satan remains constant in his wicked ambitions. The remarkable satanic success and coordination that can be seen in the unfolding of history can only be explained if one is thoroughly familiar with sound biblical doctrine and truth relative to that wicked being known as the devil. Those who reject God's divine revelation of Scripture have no alternative but to endear themselves to baseless suppositions and erroneous conclusions regarding the world in which they live. And when you consciously reject truth, regardless of how intellectual you might be, you become susceptible to being given over to strong delusions. As has been shared with us in Thessalonians 2, verses 10 through 12. We reach the end of this segment of our program, and we will pick it up in part two of The Big Sleep. We thank you for being with us. Stick around for some final messages. We, of course, thank you for joining us in this new two-part series, The Big Sleep. Once again, why do we call it this? Well, very frankly, my friends, because it serves a purpose. The vast of Americans are in the midst of a big sleep. There is absolutely no two ways about it. Many of those Americans have been asleep for well over 40 years, that 40 years that Rip Van Winkle has been laying down, catching a few Z's. We would like to invite you to call us at area code 623-327-1778 to reserve your copy of this series, The Big Sleep. We have more to go, miles to go before we sleep, and we'll conclude this series another evening. Once again, 623-327-1778. Cost of the series, $23.95 for two compact discs, $19.95 for two audio cassettes. We hope you'll join us for another evening. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett. I think we've got it.
Then maybe we should all be praying for time. Charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year, yeah, yeah. This is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take my chance and say I sang it 20 years and a day. There's nothing changed, the human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love. Jesus has so much to hate, hanging on to woe. There is no hope to speak out in the wounded skies above. Say it's much too late, then maybe we should all be praying for time.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.